Republicans and Democrats are at odds over a sweeping election bill that seeks to reform voting, campaign finance, and ethics laws. The For the People Act passed the House last month. Just one Democrat sided with unanimous GOP opposition. Republican Congressman Rodney Davis says Democrats claim the bill prevents voter suppression. Davis says that doesn't tell the whole story. Dana Vollmer reports.
Davis calls the measure a Democratic power grab that reaches far beyond voting rights.
This is not a For the People Act, as it's titled. This is not a voting rights bill. This is a For the Politicians Act. And this is the furthest thing from a voting rights bill that we can get to, because really what this bill does that doesn't get a lot of reports about it is that it gives every single member of Congress the ability to get $7.2 million put into their own campaign accounts.
The bill does empower public financing of congressional campaigns by creating a voluntary small donation matching program through a so-called Freedom from Influence Fund. A similar program already exists for presidential candidates. The fund would provide a 6-to-1 match. For every $1 a private donor contributes, an additional $6 would come from the fund. Donations are capped at $200 per donor. That fund would accumulate money primarily from surcharges on federal fines, penalties, and settlements from corporations, corporate officers, or in rare cases, individual tax code violators who are in the top income bracket. The legislation specifies no taxpayer dollars can be used to support that fund. Supporters of the measure say it will diminish the power of PACs and corporate wealth and help bolster diversity in who runs for office. That's just one part of the 800-page legislation. Davis says he believes the parts that tackle voting rights are also problematic.
Remember, the voting rights portion of this bill is to expand voting procedures that have been ripe with fraud, like ballot harvesting, a process that has already been deemed fraudulent in North Carolina's 9th District. We didn't sit a duly elected member of Congress there because one of his operatives used the ballot harvesting process that was illegal in North Carolina. However, if that individual who committed fraud in North Carolina and did that fraudulent activity in California, where ballot harvesting is legal, nothing would have happened.
Ballot harvesting, or ballot collecting, is when a third party collects and delivers ballots on behalf of voters. Davis is referring to a 2018 North Carolina case where a Republican operative was indicted for mishandling absentee ballots in an effort to sway the election. The operative was charged with paying workers to collect ballots from voters, fraudulently sign them, and then deliver them to election offices. North Carolina law only allows close family members to return ballots on a voter's behalf. Fraudulent signatures, meanwhile, are illegal in every state. In about half of states, third parties like volunteers or campaign workers can go directly to the homes of voters, collect completed ballots, and drop them off at polling places. And in some states, ballot harvesters can be paid to do that work, but not in California. Illinois does allow third-party ballot collection, but requires authorization, usually by voter signature. Supporters say this process is critical for voters who may have trouble accessing in-person voting or where mail service is scarce. That includes those living in rural communities or who lack access to transportation. This bill would allow voters to designate any person to return a voted and sealed absentee ballot as long as that person is not being compensated. There's no limit on how many ballots the third party could return. There's little documentation of widespread election fraud by either left or right interests, but Davis says Republicans are still concerned about security issues, particularly with expanded mail-in voting.
There are states like New York and California, Nevada, and others, they mail live ballots out to every registered voter. And here's the problem with that. We've identified this with the former Secretary of State, now Senator from California, Alex Padilla, at a hearing last fall. Secretary Padilla would not commit to removing identified deceased registered voters off of the voter rolls in California and thus abide by the federal law in the Help America Vote Act by making sure that voter rolls are up to date. He would not commit to removing those deceased individuals. You're talking a few hundred thousand individuals that have been identified. They all got live ballots sent to their last address.
The bill does not mandate voting by mail. It requires states to send out vote-by-mail applications, not live ballots, to all voters. California did send live ballots to all registered voters in November. An elections watchdog group claims that could have sent 458,000 ballots to voters who are dead or have moved. That was the number of registered voters who had not voted or updated their registration since at least 2008. Election officials dispute that idea. They say they used transmission of death notices, state and national change of address information and incarceration records to regularly update voter lists. However, they admit erroneous ballots will be mailed given the time it takes to receive those official notices. Still, Davis has concerns about the feasibility of expanding vote by mail.
We have to be able to hear from election administrators, which is why I had the Secretary of State from Washington State as our witness. They vote by mail 100%, but she is the first one to admit it takes longer than 5 years to implement a system like they have in Washington State. It can't be done overnight, and it can't be done at the expense of making sure the chain of custody of every ballot is paramount.
Again, the bill does not require all voting be done by mail, but state and local election officials are worried about their ability to meet the deadlines and requirements as laid out in the legislation. Many of those boxes are supposed to be ticked as early as next year, and they say some measures would significantly increase the price to run an election with no guaranteed long-term funding. Davis says these are among the reasons voting reforms are better left at the state and local levels.
We have to celebrate what we're doing right, and that's really what the Democrats in Washington don't want to do. They don't want to acknowledge that we've had record turnout, and that matters. And that shows that states and localities are actually implementing provisions that are encouraging people to vote. Otherwise, we would have seen less people able to vote. And that's a good thing. But let's leave it up to our states. Let's leave it up to our local election officials to actually administer elections in a way that's going to benefit them and their constituents.
Leaving it up to states is exactly what Democrats fear. There are more than 350 election laws under consideration in 47 states that Democrats and some scholars call restrictive. That's according to the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law. Researchers there say that's a 43% increase in the past month. Those bills would do things like eliminate or restrict early voting, tighten or impose voter ID requirements, prevent same-day voter registration, and allow for bigger voter purges. The federal step could hypothetically put a stop to all of them, but success looks unlikely. The bill would need to win over a minimum 10 Republicans in the Senate to break a filibuster, that is, unless lawmakers scrap the 60-vote threshold as progressive Democrats are calling for. Until or unless that happens, both parties can point to the issue to mobilize their bases. I'm Dina Vollmer.